This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Welcome to Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. And today we're going to talk to interesting guests about the number one thing that parents need to do in dealing with their children or in that context. We'll get more detail on that a little bit. As co-host, I have Mary Romero here. Mary, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit?
Well, thank you, Lon, for having me once again. I always love doing these shows with you. Yes, I am a life coach, and I deal specifically with adult-child relationships, conflict resolution, and abuses.
Okay, well, and Mary's going to help me talk with Chris McDuffie. Now, Chris is a CEO and founder of Turning Point Addiction and Recovering Services. He's a registered recovery worker in the state of California, a drug and alcohol counselor, and a retired high school principal, high school teacher, and high school lacrosse coach. Chris and his wife are the proud parents of two children, and they formed Turning Point Addiction and Recovery Services to help parents, families, schools, and corporations prevent addiction and to expedite one's recovery in the process. So, Chris, good afternoon. Welcome. Glad to have you here.
Thank you both, and hello to all your listeners. Happy New Year, everybody.
Okay,
and you too.
Well, yeah, Happy New Year to everybody and to both of you. And that reminds me, we have a chat function. Those of you that are listening live on K4HD.com, in the lower right-hand corner, there's a chat function, and you can ask questions, make comments as you wish as we talk, and we'll try to get to those and answer them as we progress. So now, Chris, would you start off and tell me the mission of Turning Point and Addiction and Recovery Services? It sounds like you've had a lot of experience. You've been around, you know, a high school teacher and the supporting business and stuff like that. So what's your mission at this point in time for Turning Point Addiction and Recovery, and how did you come about founding it?
Sure. Thanks, Lon. Turning Point Addiction Recovery Services is a private educational consulting group that works with the family, the employer, or the university. And we specialize in three leading areas. One is we help placing your loved one in the very best private addiction and or behavior health treatment anywhere in the country. Secondly, we lead wellness seminars for corporations or HR or colleges for two areas. One is to prevent alcohol and binge drinking and to also prevent sexual assault, sexual harassment in the workforce. And our third leading service is helping those who practice in the recovery field to maximize their social media marketing footprint. So we really work in three different areas, all within bringing the very best of prevention and recovery treatment to families or to companies.
Okay, well, sort of a personal question. How did you come to found it? What was the motivations and based upon what your experience?
Sure. Well, after 20 years as a school administrator and as a teacher and as a proud parent, I know well and I know clearly the effects of drug and alcohol addiction on employees, on parents, and on kids. And after retiring, I wanted to put my energy of education towards more good work And I founded Turning Point Addiction Recovery Services to help kids and help parents, first and foremost, find the very best private treatment. So I am a member of IECA. I'm a private educational consultant at the heart of the matter. And our mission is to help any family or any entity with prevention and recovery services, and we're really great at it.
Well, that's great. That's great. That's very, very good. Now, you refer to two books in your material, and sounds like you're very good. The answer is coming up. The parents, the first thing a parent needs to do is to help themselves first, and that's going to be that's the title we're working on. So you refer to two books, Excellent Sheep and Nurture Shock. And why are those two books important?
I do. These are two of my favorites, and if parents or educators haven't had a chance to read them, Bill Derezowitz's book, Excellent Sheep, and the other book, Nurture Shock, written by Poe Bronson and Ashley Merriman, these are two great books for today's topic of parents healing themselves and helping themselves first. You know, I personally believe in a turning point when we work with families. Families have to first heal themselves if they're ever going to be in a position to help their loved one who's suffering. What I like about these two books in particular is not only are they new and cutting edge and full with really great research. Excellent Sheep is an approach where Bill is a Harvard graduate, a Yale professor, so he's been in the trenches, and he looks at 20 years of his own education and his own professorship at Yale, and he says, we're doing something wrong here in how we prepare our high school kids for colleges. And as an educator and as a parent myself, you know, I want to create healthy, happy kids and healthy, happy families. And what the book Excellent Sheep talks about is that too many kids have been prepared to be literally, quote, excellent sheep, where they're not happy in college, they're anxious, they're depressed, and the K-12 educational experience, in a large way, has failed them. Individual parenting attempts, all with the best intentions, has led to a lot of direct failure. And these kids are not really ready for the social growth and the rigor of college, and they're also not adapting very well. We find, as educators, a lot of kids coming home after the first or second year of college experience either failed out or miserable or depressed. And Excellent Sheep questions the parent. It asks the parent and the K-12 educator, what on earth are you doing when you prepare kids for college, and are you making healthy, happy individuals? Excellent Sheep points out to parents the effects of too much anxiety, too much pressure, too much drive, and the negative risks and consequences that could possibly come out of that K-12 experience.
I just want to interject here, and Lon, you know this about me. I have to agree with you, Chris, 100%. I've got three children of my own, and first and foremost, the importance of the grades are not everything. What we're doing to our kids and what we're instilling in their mind as far as values, principles, and life skills is sorely, sorely lacking in the K through 12 educational experience.
You know, one of the important things here that I've been reading some articles is the whole idea of emotional intelligence. Now, I work in a field, and Chris, you are familiar with therapeutic boarding schools. They started in the 80s with the emotional growth type schools, the whole idea being a kid's need to learn not just academics and mental stuff, but the whole thing. And that's where I think we're falling down, because I hear oftentimes it's saying, well, we don't teach values. We're just teaching math and science and English, and then that's a fantasy. You agree, Chris?
Yeah, I think we have to be cautious when we talk about, you know, values, and you know, I want each parent to feel comfortable with their own value system and their own structure of how they individually, you know, think and want to raise their kids. But what I'm asking to do is really hold up a mirror and say, is it working? Are you creating that happy and healthy child that you think you are trying to create? And what books like Excellent Sheep does is it holds up that mirror and says to the parents, what are you doing and what is the cost to how you're doing it? And if your goal is to have a healthy, happy child, there is some wonderful research out there of what parents might want to kind of bone up on and books like Excellent Sheep is a really good starting point.
Okay, well, you know, you're talking about the two books, Excellent Sheep and Nurture Shock. I think it leads right into my next question, as asking the parents, and I presume this is what you do when you're working with parents, are you causing undue stress in your children's lives, and if so, how? And then what should you do about it?
Sure. If the family is in crisis, if the children are suffering, if the children are addicts or depressed, or, you know, it's a great opportunity for the family, again, to hold up that mirror and question, is the parenting style causing this kind of stress in the child, which again, in turn, is causing disharmony in the family? So the two books, Excellent Sheep and Nurture Shock, are great at advising parents on really what to look for. We want healthy, happy kids. Mm-hmm. And the question is, if a child is failing at school or cutting themselves, or, you know, a B student and the child, or if parents want the child to be an A student, if the child is stressful, how is the parent handling that stress? And where are they getting that kind of advice and help? Who are they turning to? And I encourage parents to turn to the experts, turn to the doctors, turn to the psychologists, turn to books like Nurture Shock and Excellent Sheep. Turn to their own spiritual counselor, if they will. But really get help. I maintain that parenting is very difficult, and all of us who are parents, I know, try our best.
Let me ask a question in there, because you're talking about things that are so obvious. Obvious stress and problems with the kids, maybe a little bit of sneaking out or stuff like that. How about a kid that her reaction is to be a perfectionist? And everybody,
I have one of those.
Yeah, well, ostensibly they're doing great. They're getting top A's, they're getting their homework in, they're yada, yada, yada. But if you look closely, those are the kids sometimes they tip over at some point. Just get too much and they give up. So what about that kind of kid?
Yes, the most stressed and anxious.
Mm-hmm. So how would you recommend parents on somebody like that that's not as obvious?
Sure. It's the same question I would ask in my counseling field. How's it working for you? You know, we ask the parents, we ask the child, we ask the individual, how is your approach working for you? Are you happy? Are you content? Or are you miserable? And the secondary question is, who's putting this anxiety, or who's creating this anxiety? Is the child creating it on himself or herself, on their own? Is it external? Is it from parents or siblings or the educational system that they're in? Mm-hmm. And again, parents are the bastion of help, and parents are the resource that the kids have to be able to feel comfortable turning to say, you know, is this pressure reasonable?
Right. I would like to interject here with the one that I have that is just, she's been a perfectionist since birth, and I worked very, very hard with her. She's actually in college now, doing very well. But I ended up telling, I don't know if you're both familiar with the story of Henny Penny. You know, the sky is falling. Just because someone says something has to be a certain way does not make it so. And the same thing that works for one person will not or may not work for another. Mm-hmm. When I told my daughter that story, it was like a tremendous weight was lifted from her shoulders. She stopped literally beating herself up over, you know, making a mistake on her homework, or, you know, having her room clean enough, you know, getting to bed on time, all of that stuff.
You know, maybe the sign to be looking for, the parent to be looking for, is if this is too good to be true.
I agree.
Sure.
Yeah, sometimes kids, they're doing great, they're getting top grades, everything's fine, they're causing no problem. Well, that's not a normal kid. Normal kid's going to sass back, or they're going to foul up somehow or other. And if nothing like that happens, I would see that as a sign, wouldn't you, Chris?
I do, and that's pretty much Bill's contention and his thesis in Excellent Sheep. I mean, we might say that child is a quote-unquote sheep. They're following the herd. They're doing everything that's asked of them. They're doing everything to the perfection that they think is demanded of them. And that's
they don't want to disappoint.
Yeah. And that's
you know, you deliver that child to Harvard or Yale or a state school, I don't care where it is, community college, and how happy is that child? How resilient is that child? And what is that child going to do when they face their first real challenge, both in dating or in dormitory friendship life or in a professor or competition in the classroom that maybe they can't quite frankly live up to?
Right.
And it's that lack of resiliency, I think. The big word today in American education is grit. And I'm shocked that grit is actually back again. But it's back again. Grit. And the grit movement, if you will, is really trying, I think, or how I like to look at it is, teach kids how to be resolute. Teach kids how to fail, observe failure, and learn and grow and move past failure to try again and try again. So I think we want the love of learning.
Yeah. One of the things I think this brings up is that the parents, it's hard to look at themselves and what they might be doing. Because I run into a lot of parents that grades is the only thing. That's the only thing that's important. Mm-hmm. And grades getting to the top college. And they need to look at themselves. They're going to need some help. So if it's too perfect, maybe they should go get some life coach or a counselor or something, or spiritual advisor or something, say, hold up a mirror to me. How am I doing?
Right, right.
Exactly. I like that quote, Lon, how am I doing is a great quote. You know, I think that opens up a whole can of great conversation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to agree too. I think it's important for us as parents. I'm sorry, Lon, I just butted in on you.
Oh, that's fine. That's why I invited you.
Chris, we might be a lot alike. My maiden name is McConnell. I don't know if you're Irish.
Yes, ma'am.
I have no problem when I make a mistake or, you know, I mess something up or, you know, I have no problem letting my kids know I screwed up. You know, the being able to laugh at yourself, being able, what are we modeling to our children when we make a mistake? Do we say, oh man, I'm so stupid, why did I do that? Or do we go, oh well, you know, sometimes these things happen and we're just going to move on and be able to laugh at yourself. I've done that ever since, you know, my children were born. And I think it has helped them be able to do the same with themselves when they come across something that doesn't quite turn out the way they thought that it would.
That's a great topic. I'll even throw out another book, Mindset. Carol Dweck's book, Mindset, is outstanding in that regard. And one piece of that book, Mindset, she's a PhD out of Columbia University, now teaching at Stanford. In her Mindset, she asks parents to be careful of how you praise your child. Mm-hmm. And is praise literally the best way to parent? Is that actually getting you the desired outcome that you think? And she's got a lot of great insight on that topic alone.
Yeah, that is so true, because it's, you know, obviously our children are not perfect. Surprise to a lot of parents out there, but and we have to view them as the people that they are, good,
you know,
and bad.
I think we're. There's a couple comments that I think relate to this on the chat function, and one of them we've already answered. Do you think you can really see if you're being a bad parent? And some of them can't. That's why they need to have somebody give a good look to them. Right. And then the next one, the listener says, why do we have to say it is the parent's fault when we as parents try our best? Could it be that the kids just are not getting the parenting? Want to tackle that?
I sure can. You know, we're not trying to point the cannon here. We're trying to have a frank conversation on parents doing their best as individuals and kids trying to do their best as individuals. And if we're talking about parenting and the topic of parents help yourself first, I think parents want to look inward and hold up that mirror and learn and grow as much as they can. Books like Mindset and Nurture Shock and Excellent Sheep are not particular philosophies to kind of marry and follow as your only parenting model. They're just great books, I think, to kind of hold up that lens to say, wow, I didn't realize that my parenting approach was actually backfiring on me with all the good intentions.
Right.
Or, boy, I didn't realize that there was a resource out there that I could learn from as a parent so I could help myself and my child. And that's what I think we're talking about today.
Yeah, and I think that's very important, what you mentioned, Chris, that we can grow and learn as much from our children as they can grow and learn from us.
Correct.
I had an instance where apparently I was hurting my child's feelings unbeknownst to me. She just broke down. She was crying. I didn't know what the problem was. I said, look, nothing can change unless you tell me what the problem is. She finally told me, and I thanked her for letting me know how she felt and let her know the steps that I was going to take to correct the situation. Because, you know, right. we don't know it sometimes unless we're told. It's that mirror thing, you know. I guess, you know, what doesn't bother me bothers somebody else. So we have to be aware of that with our children and really have that communication open so that they feel comfortable coming to us with those things.
Sure, I agree. And we haven't touched upon nurture shock as much as I'd like to. Real quickly, nurture shock does that too, Mary. Nurture shock asks parents, what are you falling back upon when you parent? Is it nothing more than how you were raised?
Mm.
And that could be very good or very bad.
Absolutely.
So nurture shock says, let's take a look at how we parent, why we parent the way we parent, and is it kind of blind? Is it just simply us following a tradition that may be very broken in a lot of ways from how we were raised as kids? And she holds out wonderful research that I trust. And again, tries to tell parents, if your goal was A, maybe the fallout is really B, and you're really misguided in your approach. And if you can kind of hold a mirror up to that, you might be real surprised at how you're parenting.
Absolutely. And sometimes it doesn't, you know, we don't, again, I'm going to repeat what you said, we don't want to point the finger, you know, at the parent. It's a parent's fault or it's a kid's fault. I don't think that we should place blame anywhere. It is a learning process. As Lon and I have talked about, parenting does not come with a handbook.
Right.
You know, and all children are different. So there's nothing wrong with reaching out and getting information wherever it's available to us for us to figure out, hey, okay, what I'm doing is not quite working for me.
I think it's important to remember here that the parenting is, there's lots of moving parts and it's lots of dynamics and there's no specific one rule. You can give some principles on that, but it depends on the circumstance, personality of the kid, personality of the parents and the dynamics and the baggage and all that kind of thing.
Right.
Got to keep in mind that there's no hard and fast rules.
No.
Correct.
Okay, now here's the next question is, do the goals of you and your spouse, I mean, us and the parents, your spouse or partner match? Are these, and are they clearly articulated? Because the triangulation that kids sometimes do, or divide and conquer, is, I think it comes to them natural. My three-year-old was trying that, especially my daughters. it just seems to come natural. So you got to remember that the goals, the parents have to be on the same page. And so the question is, are you on the same page? And I suspect a lot of parents would say no.
Right, and that's another topic, Chris, if you might chime in here, that becomes more of, well, you said this, and you said that, and she said this, and she said that. The parents need to actually come to an understanding without, you know, the children around, that they're on the same page, whether one is there or the other is not, and that neither one is being undermined behind the other's back.
Sure, great points. I like the word triangulation a lot, Lon, as well as if the parents are dealing with these moving parts that we agree the parents are dealing with, then since so much is in flux, I think the parents owe it to themselves to have time where they touch base with one another and they strategize and talk and they ask each other, you know, where are we as parents, as we're evolving as individuals and adults? You know, do we want the same thing for our child? And before we present ourselves to our children, let's make sure we have that that pre-conversation I think the parents need to do more of. Have that pre-conversation with it. So they reflect before they actually talk to their child.
Isn't it funny? Everything comes down to, and we're talking about solutions to problems, everything comes down to communication.
Everything. It sure does. Yes, it does. And you know,
okay. Okay, we've got to take a quick break, and then we'll get back to it. This is Lon Woodbury with Mary Romero, and we're talking to Chris McDuffie about parents. Help yourself first. And we'll be back in about 1 minute.
Saving Teens in Crisis Collaborative is a nonprofit organization that was formed in April of 2004 when parents of struggling teens realized that the help they were able to access for their child would prove to be prohibitively expensive for other struggling families. Saving Teens' mission is to assist troubled teens and their families struggling with substance abuse and other emotional issues. We work with the therapeutic program industry to fund and support families with financial limitations as they complete the comprehensive program that they desperately need but may not be able to afford. In partnership with programs, educational consultants, and the family, Saving Teens establishes a payment plan for services that include scholarship, family contribution, and Saving Teens funds. Our goal is to provide a total solution to troubled teens and their families with a methodology that incorporates financial and emotional support throughout a 12 to 24 month process of evaluation, intervention, and education. To donate or to get more information, please visit us at our website, www.savingteens.org. Thank you.
And welcome back. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report, here with co-host Mary Romero. And we've been talking with Chris McDuffie from Southern California, and the topic, parents, help yourself first. We've been talking about some of the issues, and we haven't really focused on helping yourself first, though it's all implied in that. A question would be, parents should ask themselves, which goals are you transferring to your children, or what are the goals you are transferring to your children? What do you think?
Sure, and also what Mary brought up is, how are you transferring those? Parents are stressed. Parents are working. 90% of the country is suffering economically, so parents are really stressed and they're working hard. Divorce is hitting over 50% in some regions, so the family unit is very stressed. When parents try to parent, unfortunately, it's often either not done or it's done in a very harried, rushed, reactive kind of way. And I see in my work, both as an educator and as a drug and alcohol counselor, that this rush job has a real dramatic downside and impacts the kids. Parents, as busy as they are, as tired they are, indeed they're trying their best, again, really have to have that communication that we talked about, Lon, where they strategize and have frank and honest, open conversation with their spouse before presenting to the kids.
Yeah, well, one of the things they might do is just by focusing on grades and academics and get into college, they are telling the kids, that's the goal, that's what we want, ahead of all else, and that's going to be very damaging.
Correct. The question becomes, what are you prioritizing for your child? I remember one parent, this dad, almost lost his daughter to drugs and alcohol and suicide, and she lived through it. And the lesson that he learned was, I'm very careful on how I talk to my child. I don't yell anymore. I don't scream anymore. I have an honest, quiet, respectful dialogue with this individual, because we don't know how children interpret. We don't know how they interpret our yelling or screaming. They don't know how they interpret our sarcasm and our backhanded compliments.
Correct.
So as much as we want to focus on directly talking to kids more and better, we also want to talk about how we indirectly send signals to our children. And if kids get the signal, either directly or indirectly, that grades are it, then the question becomes, at what consequence and at what cost?
Right. Yeah. I think you know, you mentioned the respectful conversation. I know that, you know, when I worked in a juvenile detention center, I mean, these kids did things that, you know, adult criminals did. They just were juveniles. But the people who worked with them, including me, I always felt that they should be treated with respect and dignity. I separate the person from the action. And I always seem to get a much better response and reaction that way. And I know if I speak respectful to my children and not, you know, I don't believe in name calling or we don't use shut up in this house and things like that. If they feel respected, they're going to be more willing to communicate better with you. So, you know, kids deserve respect too. I've always said that, even if they're a kindergartner, you know, when we have bullying teachers, that can become a real problem and degrade their sense of self-esteem.
Well, half of communication is listening, and parents need to listen. Kids need to listen. That's something they need to learn about, but help themselves first. They need to go and find somebody to listen to them too, the parents.
Sure.
Where did the parenting skills come from? That's a question that you oftentimes ask, Chris. And asking the parents, do you challenge any of them?
Yeah, thank you. That really gets to the heart of nurture shock. I think as parents try to do the best they can, too much falls back on traditions, norms, folkways, you know, how we were raised as kids. And this becomes interesting when we, you know, if we marry somebody or co-parent, you know, there's another body, there's another person that we now have to kind of negotiate and work with as we try to raise healthy, happy children. Particularly as parents divorce and remarry and there's stepchildren involved and there's different kind of nuances that come to that child's life. So the question comes down to, Where the heck did I learn my parenting skills? Have I learned the best parenting skills? What are the best parenting skills? And can I learn more about the best parenting skills?
Or how about what parenting skills I didn't? I didn't learn any because I didn't have any.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And, yeah. Exactly, Mary, and all the above. So the same way we might practice our golf swing, or the same way we might practice our spirituality on the weekend at our church or synagogue or mosque. You know, the same way I encourage parents to bone up on what it takes to parents, and there's a wonderful, you know, world of research out there that parents can feel, I believe, empowered to still maintain their own principles, still maintain their own values, but there is help out there for anybody who wants to be a better parent, and it's not a road that needs to be done alone or with only the resources of how we were raised.
Another thing we need to remember here that best practices in parenting has changed radically since we were kids.
Totally.
Yeah, when I was a kid, spare the rod and spoil the child was the common perspective, and that hasn't totally gone away. But that was the thing, and it justified some pretty extreme discipline. And that was accepted. That was the part of the philosophy of the time. And so those standards have radically changed. And so if you do what that's one of the problems. If you do the way you were raised, you're probably doing parenting practices that was more acceptable 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Well, you know, excuse me, Chris.
Sure.
I think I'm a perfect example of that, of the no parenting skills or what I learned not to do as a parent. I came from a very abusive, domestic abusive and child abuse and sexual abuse growing up. So the way I raised, first I did the mirror thing. Chris, I said, hey, wait a minute. You know, before I even attempt to raise children, I need to take a look at what my issues are and where, you know, what am I going, what type of parent am I going to be? What kind of skills do I want to instill in my kids? I learned what not to do from my parents. And of course, I made different mistakes along the way. But it's very important for parents to realize that what they're doing from birth on, I don't even care, even as old as I am today, I still have really bad parents as role models if I'm in contact with one of them. But and kids are going to know in their gut what feels right and what doesn't. And I think that's something that we really do need to take a look at, along with the different cultures that are coming into marriages. We want to be able to expose our kids to the different cultures and different tools and different things that are out there in the world so that they can make the best decision for themselves.
Sure. All excellent points. And again, that's why I'm not trying to prescribe a particular serum or philosophy to follow. Those parents, Lon, who had that philosophy, again, I would still urge them to ask the question, how's it working for you? You know,
right.
Did it work for you? Did it work for you as a child when you were raised that way? Does it make you a healthy, happy individual today as an adult? And is that something that you want to continue to pass on to your children and have them raised and then later on parent that way? What I like to say to parents is you have an opportunity to stop the madness. You have an opportunity to reintroduce to your family line, if you will, how you are going to parent and meet the goal. How are you meeting the goal of having healthy, happy kids and a healthy, happy lifestyle?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if I don't know if you two have realized during this part of the conversation, grades have not come into the equation.
Right.
Nobody paid attention to my grades, but I said to myself, Chris, the buck stops here. When you say you have the opportunity to stop the madness, that was the way I put it to myself, was the buck stops here. This is going to stop now, and it's going to change for my family's future. So parents
need to take a look at that. And I bet your kids are probably, you know, are certainly better off, Mary, because you took that stand.
I hope so. They actually have thanked me for my parenting, so I humbly accept that because I am certainly far from perfect.
And Lon, I think what we're all trying to do here is really save kids from the drugs and alcohol and the risky lifestyle.
Yes.
How we parent, how we don't parent, how we misparent, all, I believe, plays a large role in the resolve that kids will have to get through the middle school years, the high school years, and the college age years, ideally sober, drug-free, and at least resolute enough to get help when it's needed.
Can I ask a question on the addiction part here, Lon?
Sure.
Okay. I'm curious, Chris, if you have seen a rise in the addiction to the ADHD drugs in order for the younger generation to maintain their weight or to get through all those hard courses in college or, you know, to make sure they get those good grades. Have you noticed an incline in that?
Sure. Those things are out there, and they've been out there forever. I mean, the 60s and 70s, it was speed and,
right,
to get through the night. So really what's plaguing the country right now is the heroin and the marijuana and always the binge drinking. So if a child is anxious or has ADHD or has ADD, the question is, are they diagnosed and are they on medicine? Should they be on medicine? Are they on the proper medicine and are they taking their medicine? Or are kids using street drugs and alcohol to, in effect, manage, quote unquote, their anxiety and their ADHD, if you will?
There's another issue that fits in here, too. Are the parents insisting there be drugs? The kid's got a problem, and medication is going to help it. That's an issue that fits into this.
Sure.
Well, the other side of it is because there is no direct way to diagnose ADHD other than asking a few questions, they can get a hold of that medication pretty easily through their medical provider. The problem is when they say they have ADHD, I have trouble concentrating or focusing, can you give me something? And they're automatically handed Adderall or Ritalin or, you know. So they're not using it because they have ADHD. They're using it because they're getting the opposite effect, because they, in essence, don't need it. So they're using it as speed, as a way to party on, shall
party
I say?
Study.
Yeah.
I have a client I've been working with that had an anxiety, almost like a psychotic break, because he was sown so much Adderall under the pressures of the school. And it goes right back to one of our earlier questions, undue stress. That
right.
was a kid that was a perfectionist, and he finally tipped over. Well, we just have a few minutes, but on the positive, what should a parent do to nurture their children? What are some principles, Chris?
Sure. Stay mindful. Ask questions both of themselves as parents. Set reasonable goals and expectations. Learn all they can through the resources that are out there to add to their quiver, if you will, of what they're bringing to the table as parents. Use the resources that are out there, the spiritual counselor, the medical field, their psychiatric field, and try to get the kid to be able to be resolute, to be risk takers, where they learn from failure and grow from failure, and that they're generating children who love learning for the sake of learning. I think that's Bill's biggest comment in the book. He writes Excellent Chief. You know, these kids are kind of programmed or wired to accomplish the task and not have the love of learning. And I think parents are doing the best they can in a very changing world, a very struggling world. And there's so much changing in the 21st, 22nd century that parents have to, I think, make their kids flexible and dynamic to face the changes and challenges that are coming out in the world economy.
Okay, well, we have about 2 to 3 minutes left. And Chris, I want to give you a chance to tell a little bit about yourself. How do people get a hold of you? And one thing on mine, I didn't realize you were an IECA member. I haven't run into you at any of the conferences. But tell a little bit about that. I guess you can call this a commercial break. 2 minutes for a commercial break.
Sure, outstanding. Thanks so much. Well, our website is myturningpointbegins.com. That's myturningpointbegins.com. And if I have a call to action, I would encourage parents to go on our site. They can also follow us on Twitter at turningpointrec, as in R-E-C. That's at turningpointrec. Parents can sign up for a free consultation. They can also download some of our free educational material. We also have webinars that parents can sign up for, or corporate HR directors can sign up for, to help us bring them the Turning Point team of experts. You know, we really are experts in prevention and recovery resources that are needed. We also help with schools that want to design a K-12 drug and alcohol prevention curriculum. My perspective is that the nation is not doing much of anything for school-wide K-12 community-based drug and alcohol prevention. My understanding is that if schools are doing anything, they're using DARE, and mm-hmm. DARE has been proven to be completely ineffective. So if parents want to help their children, it's not just their responsibility. I do believe it's a three-legged tool approach from the school, the children, and the community. And we excel at helping schools and colleges with that K-12 drug and alcohol prevention curriculum as well.
Now we got to finish it up. I'm getting the high sign.
No problem.
Okay, yeah. Well, thank you very much. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. We've been talking with Chris McDuffie, and Chris helps parents, schools, and children in trying to have better lives or make it more sense. I think, what's the term you use? Happy lives, happy, satisfying lives. And and we've been talking about parents, to help yourself first. And a large part of that is to just talk and listen, and then do what you need to keep yourself together, because that's the best way you can help your children. Well, this is Lon Woodbury of the Woodbury Report. Thank you all very much. And be sure to come back next week at Tuesday at noon at the same place, k4hd.com. And we're going to have some news items we'll talk about next week.
Thank you,
Chris. Thank you,
everybody.